to the Learn Talk School podcast, our history of our school. In this episode, we delve into the 80s, where the school nearly closed.
Hello, my name is Jim Thompson. I was the school coordinator and Year 6-7 teacher from 1980 through to 1991. Well, I'd known the school a little bit because I'd been at the community school, which was an alternative secondary school in Fremantle before then. And I really liked the feeling of the school, but I knew it had been through some difficult times. You know, after Lance had left, there was a change in staff and a change in parents and some fairly intense discussions about the direction the school should go from different sections of the community. So it was an exciting time, but really I went as a part-time maths teacher and just taught maths to a few different classes. So 1980, I became coordinator, and for various reasons, the numbers were declining. They had been steadily declining since Lance had left. And so the numbers kept going down. I think 1981, we started with about 19 students, which was very scary. So I was able, that was the year I was able to get some funding to employ Paul as an art teacher. So there was Maida taking, say, years 1 to 3. I had 4 to 7, and then we had Paul roaming in between. And, you know, certainly financially it wasn't very viable at that point. And there was a crisis meeting one Sunday morning with all the school community. And would we continue on or would we close up then? And I think the existing treasurer at the time had even contacted the schools commission to say, you know, maybe we should close up, what do we do? Anyway, we had this meeting and there was a really strong feeling that the essence of the school was good. My approach was, let's not close now, let's go through to the end of the year and make this the best year possible for all the kids and families. If it doesn't work, everyone's had a good year. The price for that, of course, was that the teachers who were already well paid, well below our board rates, we all decided we'd take a pay cut to keep the school going. Well, we did our bit, the parents all did their bit, and it really worked. So what we were doing in the school was successful. So the numbers kept slowly climbing through the year. People would come and see what a positive environment it was. And I think we started the next year with about 50 students. Yeah, and then it kept growing and kept growing. So, but the school had a really good heart, and that was what we wanted to keep going. And we felt it was really valuable for Fremantle to have.
Hi, my name's Ron Gorman. I taught at the Lance Holt School in the 80s. And the 90s, I joined the school in 1984 and became coordinator in 1990. They are the best years of my life. So I first heard about Lance Holt School in the early 80s. I knew where it was. I knew it was a pretty special place, you know, doing pretty remarkable things. And I guess there was a little bit of me that wished I could go and work there. At the time, I was working at a Catholic school in Guildford for Aboriginal students. Anyway, job came up. I went for the interview. The interview panel was many people, and it was in what I think is now Deborah's classroom. So it was downstairs in the art room. And lo and behold, got the very, very happy phone call to say, you know, come on down, you're the year two teacher.
At the same time that we were trying to build the school numbers and make the school a great place educationally, we didn't have security of the building. We were leasing it from the city of Fremantle. And the council at the time, I think, felt we weren't appropriate for the West End for their vision. Perhaps a bit too rat-baggy, I'm not quite sure, but I suspect some councillors felt that. And we certainly didn't have financial security. But as the school grew and became stronger, we decided that's really where we wanted to be. You know, we used Fremantle so much. It was such a great place to learn and do things. So we did get the support of one or two councillors. We had good support from most of the local businesses who felt the kids added something. I mean, it's ironic now when you think there's Notre Dame, a whole university in the West End, and the school's still there. So with the assistance of a couple of parents, Don Whittington had been a deputy mayor, and he worked with the council and liaised with them. And it was all very hush-hush, but we got the what was then the Fremantle Gazette, which was an independent community newspaper whose offices were in the corner of Moat and High Street. They came on board as well and very supportive. So we had a few articles about the school wants to stay, how great it was. We organised funding both federally and at state level to assist with the school. So finally, behind closed doors, the council made the decision that we could stay, but it did take a lot of work. But they gave us 2 weeks, basically, to make a decision about would we buy the building, because they were going to... were going to put it out to tender, which would have been difficult for us because I think, you know, other businesses had their eyes on the site because it's a great site. Then in the end, they decided, yes, we could buy it, but they gave us a very short timeline. But we were able to convince both the Commonwealth Schools Commission and the State Education Department to give us grants. And so we were able to buy the building.
So I arrived at the school in 84, yeah, pretty excited. And at that time, the school was renting the premises from the City of Fremantle. And, you know, the school didn't have a lot of money. It was a low-fee school then. But what it did have was heart. But physically, it was really, really interesting because, you know, it had a fabulous downstairs part. We had there was an area that we called the dungeon, which was basically a storage room. There was what I call the upstairs floor and the kitchen, which just flowed from classroom into kitchen, which was really delightful. The outdoor space was really, really quite fascinating because what I called loose parts now were very, very popular then. So there were cubbies that went very, very high. There were ropes that allowed kids to swing from, you know, one part of the playground to the other. There were, you know, great tunnels. It was really a challenging play space for kids, but it was also a place where, of course, we trusted kids and we actually wanted them to experience those sorts of things, you know, creating their own play spaces and building and things that would probably have our regulators have absolute conniptions now. But that's what I walked into in 84, and it was lovely. Over a period of time, you know, the school was able to establish itself by purchasing the building. That was a struggle because, you know, the school didn't have any financial assets. It had great reputation, but we desperately needed to buy the building. And, you know, as it panned out, there was also a great deal of interest in property in Henry Street that there hadn't been before. And essentially the building went to tender, and we had to be, when I say we, the governing body at the time, the board, or council I think they called, put a bid in, which proved to be the highest, and we had the good backing of the federal government to do that. So it was a pretty desperate time because we knew that, you know, Lance Holt School belonged in Frio, and it was essential to Fremantle itself, and we really needed to stay, and we bought the building, and you know, once we established the purchase of the building, we were able to then do things with the building. So, you know, lift the roof, put on more classrooms, you know, give different opportunities for learning to happen there. And that's continued up until now, which is, you know, really quite delightful. So people will often refer to Lance Holt School as a TARDIS, and you walk in the door and suddenly there is learning happening all over the place. You're welcomed by young people. You see learning, you can hear it. It's a pretty special place, yeah.
But that was really only the start, because then we had this great old building, great location, but it was pretty run down. So we had to then secure other funding and get renovations done. And over the years, those renovations have been added to. But the very first one, it had been, the building had been a flower warehouse. It was built in the early 1900s. And on the downstairs rafters, which had been painted over, there were, when we looked above it, there were sort of mounds of old dried flour that had been painted over. So that all had to be chipped off. I don't know if people remember, there was a very horrible paisley wallpaper. That all had to be stripped off. So there were parents on weekends chipping away at all those kind of things. It was a fantastic effort, but we finally got the first renovation done.
My name is Susie Wern. I was a parent at Lance Holt, and I was the bookkeeper in the 80s. I had three children that went through the whole primary schooling at Lance Holt, and also one of my grandchildren. It was a total wreck at the time. Kim's parents came down to see this school that we raved about where our children were going, and they were horrified. They were absolutely horrified. There was this grotty one toilet out the back where the kindy, the pre-primaries is, that was just sort of a pit of a bit of land with this really grotty toilet. And yeah, they weren't very impressed, but we loved it, and it was more about what was going on in the building. Shortly after we'd managed to buy the building, my husband and I and one other chap took on the massive job of removing ghastly wallpaper from the great northern wall of the building. The three of us got all that wallpaper off, and that was a huge job, enormous job. Yeah, and I've actually, I think when I left, they'd moved a PowerPoint, and they'd found a little piece of this wallpaper underneath it, and so I've got that framed with, you know, many thanks from, and it's really lovely. It was just so nice to get that. But oh God, that was memorable. I don't know if it was a good memory, but it was just such a daunting job. Yeah, but it was this sort of brocade-y sort of wallpaper, hideous stuff. Mm.
Where did the Lance Holt School dragon come from, and why do we have it?
The dragon was hung suspended from the upstairs roof. So it was over the whole building, and the dragon originally came from Spare Parts Puppet Theatre. And in the early 80s, they were rehearsing and building puppets in the building directly opposite Lance Holt. And that's where we first developed the relationship with Spare Parts, which I think continues to today, as trial audiences. And they'd used the dragon in their production of Faustus, which had been at Curtin University. Very successful, part of the Festival of Perth, but they ended up with this dragon. And they thought, oh, maybe the children at Lance Holt would like the dragon. So they brought it over, and they actually suspended it from the roof. So this friendly dragon was always through the school. And one of the parent community, who was a graphic artist, decided it was a fitting symbol for the school. So in one of the first promotional brochures we used, he drew this dragon sort of in and out of the windows, hovering and protecting the school community. So yeah, that's where the dragon was.
Well, I worked in the office just two mornings a week, I think, and there was just a tiny little mezzanine, still up where the office is now, but it was just really quite small. And Jim was coordinator then, so I used to do the books. I did that job for about 7 years, I think. I can remember people crossing the street when they saw me coming. It was really quite noticeable. You'd see them go, oh, there she is, and they'd just cross over. So, it was hard. And because there was a lot of single mums and stuff, they used to pay at reduced rates. So money was pretty tight. And especially when the numbers were low, it was a bit of a struggle.
My name is Jesse Wern, and I started at Lance Holt when I was in year one in 1982 and was there all the way through to year seven. My mum, Susie Wern, was always involved in Lance Holt. As I said earlier, she sent three children there, paid 22 years of school fees, and her involvement just seemed to sort of slowly ramp up, I suppose, across the years. Eventually became a full-time job. I know my own mother and father were presented years after we graduated, because they're still involved with the school. It wasn't just me who went to Lance Holt. I had a younger brother and a younger sister, and mum and dad were presented with a plaque and a thank you note for paying 22 years of school fees. They got a little bit of wallpaper that someone had found behind a meter box. And the reason they got the wallpaper is because I think Dad had probably quite sillily volunteered to help strip it. And volunteered to help strip it, I think, ended up being most of the building. So between him and Mum, certainly put in a lot of effort that weekend.
What was the school like in the 80s?
Try to describe Lance Holt to someone who has been to a school. Almost impossible. I mean, it's just, it didn't look like a school. Certainly, like, it doesn't these days. It looks like a rabbit warren of mystery and fun, but it doesn't look like your traditional school. And back in the 70s, it looked like what it was, a old rundown building that had some of the guts pulled out of it and still had old crappy wallpaper that was peeling, carpets that were a nightmare, potentially infectious. The playground was rough gravel, okay? If you were playing chasey with the children in the playground in those days and you took a dive, there were consequences, okay? You were going to lose a knee. it was rough and ready, but it was great. That playground, we literally had four telephone poles drilled into the ground, and every 3 months, 6 months, busy bee, and up would go a cubby house between the four telephone poles that had been drilled into the earth. Students, parents, teachers, whoever, nailing stuff on there, cubby house. Violent storm, less cubby house, new busy bee, new cubby house.
The outside yard was one of the more interesting spaces, because there had been big poles erected and cubbies and tree houses built in the yard, which was really exciting for the kids. Yeah, so, and which, when another teacher, Paul Cavasi, an art teacher, came, and Paul is a very good artist, a very good teacher, he and I did some renovations on the cubbies to make sure they were safe. Oh, I think we had one broken arm at least, so. And I'd have to say it was reasonably chaotic, which is one of the joys of Lance Holt. It was an open plan on the top level and on the bottom level, where the piano was and the meeting space was for the meeting every morning. And there were learning areas which were defined with a few chairs and desks.
I believe my first teacher was Poonam. Yeah, lots of stories about Poonam. I think definitely my favourite being a time she stood up to a child having a tantie in a way I certainly don't think you'd get away with these days. It's a very early 80s reaction to a child having a bit of a tantrum, trying to assert some authority over a teacher. I think he got up on a desk, got nice and eye level with Poonam, had a bit of a screaming match with Poonam. Well, I mean screaming match, he vented at Poonam. Poonam stood there calm as a rock, took this anger from the child, let him say that she was not the boss of him, that he didn't have to do what she told him. Poonam calmly got up on the desk next to the child, so she was now towering over him again, and asserted that, yes, she was the boss of him. She did have... he did have to do what she told him, and then dragged the desk out onto the street, threw it into the middle of the street and told the child to drag it back inside. But she was great. like I say, I know you wouldn't get away with that these days, but it worked. this friend of mine dragged his desk back inside, realised who was the boss of him, did get back to work, and, you know, I think if you spoke to him today, we'd also have fond memories of Poonam.
Hi, hello, I'm Poonam, and I was a teacher and a parent, a teacher first and then a parent at Lance Holt School in the early 80s. I had a grade 6 class and my daughter was there for a while. I worked with Jim Thompson, Paul, Susanna and Catherine. I can't tell you exactly when I first went to the school because I can't remember. I think it was 82 or 81. I was there for 2 years. Why did I choose to go there? Well, I was in the commune just down the road and I knew Jim Thompson and he asked me if I'd like to. So that's why I was teaching there. I've always preferred to be with kids than adults most of the time. I haven't really matured much. I know I look it, but I haven't. I'm an actor. I think to be a good teacher, you have to be. You know, I know how to blow a fuse absolutely fearlessly and totally. And the kids will never be afraid of me because I come straight back. And the minute they get something, I'm holding them and I'm loving them.
Not long after year one, I met Ron Gorman. As Ron developed with the school, he actually moved up in the years, as is often the case. The more senior teachers often seem to take the higher classes, and Ron climbed up. So I actually ended up with Ron Gorman for about 4 years of Lance Holt. And because of that, I will never not have the word groovers somewhere in my vocabulary. It's just, it was said all the time. We were all groovers.
Having kids for 2 to 3 years, you get to know them really, really well, which is a fantastic thing, you know. And, you know, what we do know, you know, from research is that what works well for young people's learning and their futures is about the relational aspect of, you know, the event of schooling. So, you know, you get to know the kids, you know, the teachers are tuned in, and, you know, getting to know the kids is an absolute delight because, you know, it's a bit like an airline ad, you know, subtly every airline is different. But, you know, when you've got, you know, 20 kids in your class, you've got 20 amazing young people who come with, you know, a range of backgrounds and dreams and, you know, desires. And, you know, that's part of, you know, knowing the child and just being part of their learning journey and, you know, having the inputs that you hope are going to, you know, have that child highly engaged and head for a pretty bright future.
So, look, I refuse to pick my favourite teacher, but I will put on the record if any of them are willing to get in a bare-knuckle fist fight to see who is my favourite teacher, I think that would be great.
And my name is Gee Wilson. My mum taught at Lance Holt School in the early 80s and then I attended for grade 6 and 7, which was 87 and 88. Loved it. At the time, I think I'd sort of been moved around a lot. I'd been to, you know, it was my fifth school. I'd been to lots of primary schools. I'd had that experience as a young kid of going in and making friends and going into situations and not making friends and had a bit of that sort of in my, you know, background. And I think I went there and maybe it was because I had sort of some history as well. But, yeah, I just sort of felt I found kind of my family as well, and good solid friends who I'm still really good and solid friends still now.
My name is Tasha Goulden and I went to Lance Holt School in the 1980s, and I have two girls that go to Lance Holt School now in 2020.
When you were at school, did you have morning meeting too?
I love morning meeting, and it's something that when my children went to Lance Holt that it made me the most emotional, because I think it's an absolutely unique thing to Lance Holt, a unique thing that we do, that it is a community thing, and there is the parents there and there are the teachers there and everybody feels like they have a voice. And I think the kids come up with the most adorable, cutest, funniest, amazing stories. And then there's the shyer ones that eventually they generally end up putting their hand up and saying something, and everybody notices, oh, this is the first time they've said something, and they share something and everybody encourages them, and I don't think there's any judgment or ridicule. I mean, they can say the coolest or the silliest thing and everybody is very supportive, and I think it's a beautiful thing about the school. To me personally, I now declare this meeting open. Has anyone got anything to say? When they first said that, makes you emotional. When they first said that, my kids were there. Literally, my sister comes every now and again to the meeting, and they say that, and she gets emotional. It's an emotional memory for me. It's a beautiful thing. I love that about the school. They never should stop the meeting.
I do remember as an older kid, trying to drag meeting out on occasion, particularly if you knew you had maths that morning, you'd encourage some small kid, Timmy, don't you have a new toy to talk about, and get them waffling on for another 15 minutes. Definitely some delaying tactics. But but I just remember it being a good way to start the day, you know. It just seemed to give everybody a place to look one another in the eye. You know, Lance Holt's still a school and you only spend lunchtime and recess with the whole school as the rest of the day, but that one time in the morning when you can really come together.
So, but morning meetings were always just a really nice space that created, you know, discussions and energy, and if anyone had any complaints, it was just a beautiful open forum for people to either, gripes, happiness, good stories. This particular song, Feeder and I went away, and again, I think I was a 12-year-old, knew that my period was imminent, it was coming, it was going to happen, went home. I think we were all kind of waiting for it. You know, it was like this kind of thing that was coming. It's coming. We're waiting. And we adapted a song. I think at the time it was Kylie Minogue, It's Got to Be Perfect. And at the time, the latest pad out on the marketplace was called Sure and Natural. And we got the pads and we got tomato sauce and we put tomato sauce on the pads. We went to school the next morning because we'd come up with this amazing performance. And there we are at morning meeting, classic, you know, two little girls, age 12, with sticky tomato sauce pads all over their arms as outfits, singing a hilarious song about periods. It was received fine. We were having a great time. We thought it was hilarious.
We had a fireman's pole. Oc Health and Safety these days, they wouldn't let kids have a fireman's pole. We had a fireman's pole, okay? And to get to meeting, most classes, most days, even if you were downstairs when meeting was called, you would run upstairs so you could enter meeting via the fireman's pole. It was like Hogwarts. It's the only way I can describe it. It was such a unique place that you can't even understand how unique it is until you leave it. As a child, okay, I didn't know that Lance Holt was different. It was the first place I went, you know. I didn't go to other schools. I went there from year one all the way through to year seven. And it wasn't until I got to high school that I sort of went, is this what other people do? Why? You know, why are you doing this? This is mental. Like, you don't have to. You can do it other ways. You can go to the park. You can go on excursions, you can learn on the floor. You don't need shoes or a desk or a teacher that you call sir.
Jim Thompson was my teacher, and I think I would say he's been my favourite teacher for my whole life. All the teachers I've ever had, I think Jim would be my favourite. He was warm, he was funny, he really felt like you knew him. He definitely was a huge part of my self-esteem being boosted. He made me feel amazing, actually, about myself.
I always love going to work and being with the students who were in the classroom there. We used to, I felt we learned a lot, did a lot of, had a lot of fun. I hope they did too. You know, they were good groups, and it was a nice, it felt like a really nice, secure, friendly place to go every day and learn about things that were happening in the world.
One of my favourite memories of Lance Holt is where the office is now used to be a mezzanine loft, and now it's the office. And we went up there. School was put on hold because Princess Fergie, was that her name? Princess Fergie was getting married. And we all went up there and watched it. It was amazing, and I thought it was amazing. And that's where we sat and watched it. That's one of my biggest memories, weirdly enough, watching the royal wedding on the mezzanine. It was really fun. My dad drove the old bus, which you called the Dingo bus. It's a big old school bus. And he drove it to Kalbarri, which is quite, would have taken a long time, massive drive, because he had a bus licence, so he drove it. But Ron Gorman was on the bus, and my dad had told me this story. In the middle of driving it, whispered to Ron, the brakes have gone. And busload of kids, the brakes had completely gone on the bus, and he had to take it down in gear and slowly skid over to the side in this massive school bus, which I actually think was quite a memorable, scary experience for my dad, because he spoke about it quite often. And then I think that might have been the end of the Dingo bus. I'd like to hear people that can actually remember the end of this story, because I don't know what happened. I think there was a lot of kids on the side of the road for a long time. This is before mobile phones.
It was at the time of the Azaria Chamberlain, and it was used in a film set, had a dingo painted on it. Jim knows the story really well. And people would pull up and kids would be, you know, hey, we're out. And there'd be a dingo on the side of the bus. And people think you don't put kids in a bus with a dingo on.
We had a number of school buses. the first one that I was aware of that I drove was a psychedelic painted old Metropolitan Transport Trust bus called Roger. And my first experience with it was actually at the when I was teaching at the community school. And I and the art teacher took a camp up to Shark Bay, and we were stopped in Geraldton by the police, who stopped this very suspicious-looking vehicle with long-haired teachers and long-haired students, and they searched the bus from beginning to end before we were allowed to go on our way. So there were different times then. That wouldn't happen now. But that bus went on a number of wonderful camps at Lance Holt. Then unfortunately Roger was put out to rest. He could no longer be resuscitated, and we bought a big orange bus, once again an old Transport Authority bus, and that went on a number of wonderful camps as well. And it was great because we could generally take the whole school in it when the school was smaller. As the school got bigger, it became more difficult. Then we had a small minibus, which I remember had the LHS symbol painted on sign, which was in fact very similar to the Superman logo. But DC Comics, if you're listening, it wasn't the Superman logo, so don't sue us. But it was very similar, and we even had T-shirts designed like that. They were a lot of fun days. Then that bus was put out to rest and we got another one. So, but then the school grew so much it wasn't able to take the whole school just in those two buses. But we had a lot of fun with the buses. We did have a few breakdowns, a few late returns from camps. And the teachers had bus licences and that's what we did.
Yeah, the bus breakdown. I remember it just breaking down. I don't mean it wasn't traumatic in any way, like there was no accidents or, you know, it was just, dingo bus is broken down, bummer. And then what was next? I guess we got picked up and moved on and camp. And
Nanga Bush Camp was great, you know, scout hall bunks, canoeing by the lake, treks through the bush, you know, squirrel spotting or possum spotting, I should say, at night, all sorts of good stuff. But I'm pretty sure it was coming back from Nanga Camp and we had one of the old old rickety buses that we used to trolley around in break down, conked out by the side of the road. And I think there was a big bus and then the minibus. And the minibus was still active, and maybe they noticed we'd broken down and had swung back round and gone off to get help or something. But so the kids are all bored and they've piled off the bus and are exploring around. And of course the kid with an extreme bee allergy goes and gets stung by a bee while the bus is conked out by the side of the road and the support vehicle's already halfway to Timbuktu trying to get help.
We'd always take the older students on a separate camp somewhere and then go on whole school camps. Rottnest has always been a big favourite. I mean, I'm sure that they'd been to Rottnest in the early days when Lance was there, but Paul and I restarted it with just 12 students and hired one big cottage and did the same thing with the torches in the gun tunnels at Rottnest before they were open as a tourist attraction. So, not sure you can do those things now, but anyway, they were great fun and great times. And we always use them to create magazines and stories and, you know, it was so much fun, basically, at the school as well as learning. Fun for the teachers as well as the students.
One camp story that is very strong in a lot of my friends' memories, my sister had to help me remember a little bit of it, was Rottnest Camp. So even way back then, we still went to Rottnest. It was one morning, all the kids woke up and there was toilet paper everywhere wrapped around every child's bike. Absolutely covered with toilet paper down the street. Every child's bike had been covered in it. And the children, we thought that maybe the older kids had played a prank on us. We thought, you know, oh, this is the older kids. Oh, this is funny. And then when we found out, it was actually the parents and the teachers that had possibly had a few wines. Seriously. And they thought, let's prank the kids. And the kids, when they found out that it was the teachers and the parents, we thought it was the funniest thing in the whole world. And it was a very funny prank.
Was music and art at the school in the 80s?
Music was always a part of Lance Holt, as was performance of all varieties. One of the things I found really interesting about moving from Lance Holt was I went to John Curtin, which was a theatre arts school. And I'm like, what? You mean not everybody does this stuff? This is all stuff we were all doing it. Like, it was still something I was mistaken for, even though I never entered the theatre arts program when I went to John Curtin. But people were always like, oh, were you a theatre arts kid? And I'm like, no, I just went to a primary school that was sort of like that. So plays, school plays were very common, as was singing in meeting.
Maida was also around. Oh, she was sort of like Mother Teresa for Lance Holt School, in a way. Everyone. Oh, and the piano and Maida, and she's a sweetheart. She really was. She was great. She knew how just to go with her energy regardless, and I always enjoy that in anyone.
I do remember the end-of-year concerts, the graduation. Generally, ours were always at the school because the population was small, and, you know, the teachers would organise different classes to do different things, and the students usually help write the things, so they were pretty funny. But at the same time, for instance, Maida had a huge interest in music and put on the Pied Piper of Hamelin at the old Maritime Workers Union building, which is now part of Notre Dame University. And it was a great production, a lot of fun, but one of the things I remember was that chicken pox was going through the school at the time. We were never quite sure who was going to be up or down for the performances. So that was full production, sets, costumes, people learning lines and singing. So that was a lot of fun. And we'd hire music specialists and drama specialists to come in and work with students. So to give everyone a broad range of experiences. And we didn't expect each teacher to have all those skill sets. So
we used to have drama class at the Fly-By Nightclub in the day. So we would go there, Prebode. Yeah, we'd do, what was it called? Theatre sports with Prebode at the Fly-By Night. And that would be our, you know, drama session. And then we did a big play production called The Incredible Mind-Blowing Trial of Jack Smith that we performed at Spare Parts Puppet Theatre.
I had great memories of doing art with Megan Kerwin Ward. She was great fun. I really remember it. I remember making paper. She taught us how to actually make paper with screen printing and tie-dyeing.
Can you tell us about Lance Holt School and its sense of care and kindness?
So in terms of social conscience, one story that I do remember quite well, we read a book called Sadako and the Thousand Paper Cranes, and that is the story of the dropping of the nuclear bomb on Hiroshima, and it's a beautiful story and it's a tragic story, and it's one that I remember reading to the kids. The kids wanted to do something with that, you know, what can we do? And we decided to have a vigil at St John's Square on Hiroshima Day to simply stand there to say, as children, you know, a horrible thing happened. We hope that will never happen again. And I know, I remember that the kids and the teachers, with the teachers' assistance, they organised to invite all of the schools in the district. I think they put out 76 invitations, and I remember we had a banner which was Hiroshima Never Again. The Lance Holt kids stood by that vigil. Nobody else came. Shame. But it was quite fascinating because the media were particularly interested in young people having a social conscience. In fact, the media are still having conniptions about young people having a social conscience today, which is a real shame. But nevertheless, young people can care and they can do something about that. And they did. I got a phone call from the then member for Fremantle a couple of days later saying, you know, can you just brief me what happened? I said, well, kids said that horrible thing happened and they had a vigil, which was a very respectful thing to do, never want it to happen again. I then got a phone call from the opposition spokesperson for education saying that he would make sure I never taught again if he was minister. And I thought, well, that was interesting. I'm not sure if I've shared that with too many people, but I remember thinking, hang on a minute, that's pretty ordinary form. It shocked me. I put it aside because I wasn't going to ever sort of compromise the voice of young people. And, you know, in subsequent years, you know, different things happened in that social conscience world. And, you know, I remember backing it because, again, it was the right thing to do. Even in a number of years, the partnership that the school grew with the city of Hiroshima was really quite beautiful. So, you know, it got to a really good space where the mayor would write to the Lance Holt kids and the kids would send up, you know, 1,000 paper cranes because, you know, it became, you know, an important thing. It became a ritual of, you know, let us not ever do horrible things to other people again. Mm. So, you know, that care and kindness, those dispositions were allowed to flourish. So even though it was a good thing for the kids to do, and I do have very, very clear memories of that as well. So, yes, so, you know, developing young people's social conscience, giving them voice and giving them space, you know, takes a little bit of daring and courage, but, you know, certainly needs to be respected.
What stayed with me from Lance Holt, I suppose, is that sense of self, that sense of... I suppose the sense of community, but your unique individuality within that community.
I would sincerely believe Lance Holt School influenced my self-esteem from when I was really young, and it really set me up for high school. I felt really confident being at that school, and I really carried that on to high school. And I felt like my voice mattered in a huge school where you were essentially a number, and I ended up sticking up for other children in the class. It didn't always get me very far, and I got into trouble, but I really felt that sense of justice and that my voice mattered, and I really believe that came from Lance Holt. Just I felt confident and that I mattered.
When I look back on the school and where it was in the 80s, we were, because for so long it felt under threat, we were only looking one year at a time. So to look then and think in 40 years, 35, 40 years' time, it would be where it is now, was hard to see. But at the same time, that's what we really wanted. We felt it was such a great school and it had a strong place in the community that it could grow and could really develop. And it has. I mean, I think it's fantastic. And the nice thing for me is that on the occasions I do go to the school, I still feel really welcome and as part of the school community, even though it's been so long since I was there.
I just believe Jim Thompson was the ultimate in seeing the best in children, seeing what their passions and what they were really about. You've really felt like he respected and knew you.
The other thing for me, as an ex-member of the school, active member of the school community, is being in Fremantle and seeing ex-students and seeing all the wonderful things they're all now doing and feeling that, excuse me, little emotional, feeling that they're my friends as well as ex-students, you know, and it's fantastic.
I mean, I still think it's got that sense of community. I think that's definitely endured, but very much the same feel, I think. A great sense of community and just welcoming the staff always are to parents to participate and just, you know, drop in whenever they felt like it, and I'm sure it's still like that.
Lance Holt really, it respected kids. Like, you didn't have a lot of other schools. You have the adults and the children, and there's such the great in between. Whereas I think, you know, Lance Holt really, you're equal to a point, you know, but there's obviously adults and children and you have different parameters for both. But I feel like, we weren't just kids, or we weren't just, you know, seen and not heard, and that sort of, there was just a definite attitude towards kids.
It celebrated children.
Celebrating, exactly.
We were celebrated. All our quirky, weird differences were celebrated and encouraged.
Well, and also that you're in an environment that you've got, you know, smaller kids, it's close and knit, everyone knows everyone, everyone's probably more personable, you know, you just have that. Yeah, more accountable.
I remember talking to people I went to high school with after high school and kind of going, oh, you're the year above me. You're the year below me. That's why I don't know who you are. I knew the year sevens when I was in grade one. You know, I knew all the kids throughout the... And when I'm in year seven, I know the grade ones as well. You know, you're going around interacting with them. They're not other people. They're part of the school.
For me, as the coordinator and a teacher, the most exciting thing was it was such, and it still is, such a great school and has such a great feeling. I mean, I've often told people that it's the best job I've ever had, and I still believe that. Even though I've had other good jobs, it was by far the most challenging, the most exciting, the most interesting, and working with a great bunch of people.
The overriding principle of everything is learning should be fun. And we're here to have fun.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. In our next episode, we hear all about Lance Holt School in the 90s.
This has been a Temperley production.